The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Everybody, Bill Buckmaster, along with Ray Allen. Ray's engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass, and together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday, July the 12th, 2018, coming to you from Tucson's Voice, AM 1030, KVOI. We've got our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. All of our programs available on the podcast for you 24/7 on the website. Let's welcome now the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Richard Elias. Supervisor Elias, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. That's one of those beautiful July days. The clouds are building.
I love the puffy white clouds.
Aren't they beautiful?
Oh, very beautiful. Have you gotten much rain at your home?
Not a lot.
Mm-mm.
Not a lot, but hope springs eternal.
They got a lot on the Marana and the Oro Valley area, been kind of hammered over the last couple of days. But
some damage up there, too. Serious.
Midtown, not so much. But this is so typical of our summer thunderstorm season. You can go a couple of blocks away and it could be dry, and other places flooding.
Well, I saw a friend of mine who posted something on social media yesterday, and she said, "It's raining somewhere. That's good."
That's right. It's raining somewhere in Pima County. We have a lot to talk about with you today. Let's begin with an issue that really is a fight is brewing, as my friend Joe Ferguson at the Arizona Daily Star reported a couple of days ago. And this fight is over whether Pima County Board of Supervisors, you, Supervisor Elias, and your colleagues can kick the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers out of the county-run jail. So do you want ICE in the jail?
Well, you know, we are hearing about this issue more and more and more from the public at each board meeting that we've had over the last several months. When I first heard about ICE being in the county jail was last year, in a meeting with some immigration activists and Sheriff Napier, and we all immediately told him, "This is a terrible idea. You should end this right away. Nothing good is going to come of this." And now we've seen ICE being extricated from jails all across this country. This is not just here in Pima County. This is not just crazy immigration activists who live along the border. This is a reality, and it's imperative, I think, that we only have one law enforcement agency in our jail here in Pima County, and that should be the Pima County Sheriff's.
How long has ICE been in the Pima County Jail?
They have been there since, I believe, February of last year.
Why are they there?
You know, they asked to have a more physical presence there over a longer period of time when the Trump administration came into office, and Sheriff Napier came into office at the same time. And so this is an effect that's taken place during all of the changeover in ICE and its operations, and frankly, them becoming more of a rogue organization. I mean, the separation of children and families is going to be a black mark on our history that we will learn about for years, and we should not forget. And so we have a responsibility, I think, to make sure that the public is being treated well, that those prisoners who are there in Pima County Jail are being treated well, and that we are being fair in the way we deal with immigration enforcement here in Pima County. It's critical. And Stone Garden Grant is another one that's a big issue that's brewing. There's Hydra Grant as well that's brewing. Sheriff Napier and his staff have not responded to all the questions that the Pima County Board of Supervisors presented them. and asked them to answer prior to drawing down any money on any of those grants. So ICE in the jail is another part of that discussion. Even if there was not a legal means for us to remove ICE from the jail, the Board of Supervisors, I think we should ask Sheriff Napier to do it, and I think he should do it in response to the public's concern about folks who are there in Pima County Jail with really an unfair situation for immigrants and others who come there, and setting up more profiling happening in our community is a constant problem that goes right hand in hand with what I'm talking about.
The sheriff, not you and the board members, do have the sheriff has kind of the general authority to operate the board, but while the board controls the sheriff's budget and has the authority to make other fiscal decisions concerning jail operations. So do you foresee this coming to a vote? Perhaps at your meeting now monthly in the summer, your next meeting would be August.
That's correct.
And you as the chair would be able to, you would have the authority to put this on an agenda.
That's correct. That's correct. As I said, I think this is a matter where we probably ought to ask Mark to do this in public at a meeting. And then if we need to have a legal showdown over it, so be it. In addition to having authority over budget, the Pima County supervisors also have authority over every lease in every county property, whether it's in the jail, whether it's in transportation building, or any building that we own. We have control over those leases as the Board of Supervisors, and I think that gives us puts us in a position where we have some authority over another law enforcement agency acting in power in our jail.
And, of course, we do want to mention that Sheriff Mark Napier will be here as my guest tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview, and, of course, we'll be hearing his reaction to what Supervisor Elias is saying right now. And there was a 13-page legal analysis, including a letter sent from the American Civil Liberties Union that outlined the legal arguments as to how the supervisors could actually force the sheriff's hand and push out the federal agency.
That's correct. And I think the ACLU memo has a lot of merit to it. And I think that our lawyers missed the boat on that opinion, quite honestly.
Really? How so?
Well, I think that they made a mistaken judgment in how far the sheriff's authority goes over contracts and lease space and properties that Pima County owns.
The sheriff was, I think he was at a news conference yesterday with Governor Ducey talking about the border. And this plays back into this whole Stone Garden thing, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Why don't you explain briefly what that is?
Stone Garden is a federal grant that's used for local law enforcement agencies to have them assist in immigration enforcement at all different kinds of levels. So almost all the jurisdictions here in Pima County get a Stone Garden grant. Pima County has the largest one as well. Let's put it in perspective with some numbers, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Stone Garden in the last year has made Stone Garden grant operations have accounted for 4,931 vehicle stops. But only 16% of those stops resulted in citations. So what happened?
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
What
when we
happen,
look at the city of Tucson's numbers, they made 3,439 stops, but they issued 60 citations. That meant somebody was breaking a traffic law when they were stopped, and there was a reasonable reason to account for it as a Stone Garden issue.
Mm-hmm.
So what is happening when we're only issuing 16% of citations? But when you look at the numbers, guess what?
Mm.
162 people were turned over to the Border Patrol by the Pima County Jail, by the Pima County Sheriff's Department. TPD turned over 10.
And what does that tell you?
Well, that sounds to me like we have some serious issues there about racial profiling and what's happening there.
All right. let's pursue this after we take a break. Mona's is our favorite bakery in town. Supervisor Elias, I know we've talked about this before. You love bakery goods.
You know, my physique shows that too, Bill.
Mona's is the Danish bakery that is home to the Danish Kringle, and those Kringles are so, so good, filled with all that great kind of different flavorings and stuff. Anyway, Mona's, located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, owner Steve and his team of bakers get up so early to make sure the bread that you're eating right now on your sandwich at Mona's is very fresh. Go by right now for lunch. Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. There's a link to Mona's and a link to all of the partners, the people who make this program possible, by going to buckmastershow.com. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday, we talk with Pima County Sheriff Mark Napier. The Friday Roundtable features Joe Ferguson, political writer for the Arizona Daily Star, and the executive editor of the Tucson Weekly, Jim Nintzel. Matt Russell of Inside Tucson Business has Weekend Watch. Buckmaster on AM 1030 KVOI, always on buckmastershow.com. It is the Buckmaster Show. Silver City has been a great sponsor of this program. Their big event, this is really the signature event, kicks off next week. It's their clay festival. It's everything to do with pottery. It's only a 3-hour drive over to Silver City, great part of the United States, the southwestern United States, and the southwest corner there of New Mexico. Richard Elias is with us here in studio. Supervisor Elias, chair of the board. We were talking during the break. I said I was going to do the mention about Silver City, and you mentioned to me that you're planning a trip over there very soon.
Yeah, we're heading over there, not next week, but the week after that. My wife, my daughter, and her dog, Cinto. Mm-hmm. And so we're really looking for it because we just love Silver City and southwestern New Mexico in particular. And the university there is a great place, western New Mexico.
Have you been up to Pinos Altos, which is just north of historic downtown Silver City, and it's 7,000-foot elevation.
Well,
Very nice.
That's where we're going to stay, Bill. And so we're really looking forward to it because it's just so beautiful there in those tall pines. And, you know, I've heard that the beer is really cold there at the Buckhorn Saloon.
That's a fun place.
Yes, it
oh,
is.
Oh, boy. Oh, over the years, I've had some really good meals there. I've seen some great entertainment. Not normally, I'm not into country and western music, but when they do the kind of the roadhouse stuff going on, yeah. I get into it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah,
I agree.
So
I agree.
Anyway,
have a good time.
Silver
I'm looking
City,
forward to it.
southwestnewmexico.org. Caller who wants to know, Supervisor Elias, could you clarify the difference between legal and illegal immigrants?
Well, legal immigrants are obviously involved in the process of obtaining some kind of immigration status when they come here. It's a very long process that's expensive and drawn out. Can go on for as long as 15 years with different kinds of temporary visas that they issue as well. Illegal immigrants are people who come here without documentation. It's a civil offense. This is not a criminal offense. Most folks are coming here to find a better life, just like people have crossed the borders here in the borderlands in southern Arizona since time immemorial. This has been a crossing point, and we have to understand that people have a right to having a life. And it's very unfortunate that we have so many undocumented folks here in this country. I'd like to end all that and bring those folks out of the shadows. I think that's what we need to do so that they can become Americans, citizens, and live with all the advantages we have and pay all the debts that we have. And it's very interesting that we somehow refuse to let people come here.
Quick comment from Robert called about illegal immigration. Robert, before we change topics, I'm going to put you on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Richard, all of y'all who feel like these are innocent, illegal people, why don't you foster home them instead of penning them up? Wouldn't your home be a good place?
Okay.
To have a few of these people until they sort it out?
I'm not sure what you mean by your question. I think that's rather odd. But over the years, certainly coming from the ranch family that I had out there in Sopoti, a lot of folks came over and crossed that were Tohono O'odham and people from Mexico. And they came and they worked at the various ranches throughout southern Arizona and helped people complete the work that needed to be done and were productive in the way they lived their lives. So I'm not sure really what your question is, but I do believe that most of the people that are coming here come here with a very good heart and want to live our lives peacefully, just like me and you.
All right, Supervisor Elias, you and the board members, with the exception of Allie Miller, Supervisor Miller, District 1 Republican, said no to this, but it will go forward. The voters will be considering a $430 million bond question for regional road repair. What do you say to Supervisor Miller, who has led the charge that pretty much since day one on the board, that she always says it's about the roads?
Allie needs to stop being disingenuous and start supporting a program that would bring us enough money to make a significant improvement in the roads in our community without damaging other county services that are vital to all of us. She knows the score. It's been her prerogative throughout her tenure on the Board of Supervisors to really try and hurt the Pima County brand, and this is just another function of that. We need to be serious and approve Proposition 463 on the November 6th ballot, $430 million. they are bonds, but we have a plan together so that we can repay those bonds very quickly so that it's almost pay as you go. We have an excellent bond rating, which means we'll receive good terms on those bonds when they're issued. I think this is a win for all the jurisdictions. Tucson, South Tucson, Sahuarita, Oro Valley, Marana are going to get 64% of the money.
And the county will be, this bond ordinance is going to have oversight, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the bond funds can only be spent on road construction, preservation, and repair. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And when we say construction, I think we're really saying reconstruction. This is not for new roads. This is about road repair. So that is absolutely critical for us to understand. 64% of the money going to the other jurisdictions, 46% of the money going to Pima County and the unincorporated areas. It's a fair deal for all of us. I think it's really important. And those people who do not want to see this bond pass, I'm sorry, you're just not being serious about how we can best move forward so that the economics of our community can be improved for businesses, for folks who live here, and for our visitors who come here, for investors who believe in Southern Arizona, and for our neighbors from Mexico who come here to trade and do business with us.
Are you you said Allie is being an obstructionist. Is that what you said?
I think she's being disingenuous in her objections to Proposition 463. She says we can do this by just reducing county budget and changing the way we spend. I'm sorry, our problem is so big that it's just not realistic. This puts our attention to it. This is a chance for us to do it. Basically, pay as you go. I think we're going to find real success if we approve Proposition 463.
All right, let's go to Julie, who would like to join the conversation. Hey, Julie.
Hi. Hey, thanks. I would like to ask Supervisor Elias about the $1 million, what was it, $41 million he wanted out of the road fund for his welfare project.
Okay.
Is that still on the table, or has that been eliminated?
No, that has been eliminated, and I'm fine with that. That was put in place due to my objections, you're correct, because of the nature of the previous proposition being a sales tax, which is really regressive and very, very, very bad for low-income community people. And we have destroyed the safety net here in Arizona. And the bonds that we are now proposing are general obligation bonds, so they will be paid by the general fund of Pima County, which is funded by property taxes 100%. And we took everybody's taxes down 37 cents to be able to do this right now.
Matthew has called us at 790-2040. Hey, Matthew.
Yeah, Supervisor Elias, first of all, I would associate myself with all your comments about the county jail and ICE. I think that we definitely need to follow a program where we treat people as human beings that are important to our society. But on the bond issue, I just want to compliment you for reducing the figure to $400 million approximately to fix the roads. I think this is a very feasible plan, and it can be supported by the public, and I would urge everybody to support this program. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your comments, and I appreciate them, and I think you're right. This is something that's affordable. It's being presented correctly. It's being paid for in the right way. And we can make a real difference in the roads right here in Pima County and all the jurisdictions in Pima County with a vote in November.
Will you be listing what roads would be getting attention? Will that be part of it?
Well, it might be in terms of the roads that we're talking about here in Pima County.
Uh-huh.
In the unincorporated areas. The other municipalities, I don't know how they go about prioritizing what roads they're going to fix. But I think we're going to have a whole lot of information available to people about exactly what we're going to do. All of it 100% for road repairs.
And what the opposition is going to say, hey, we can't afford this.
Well, they continue to say that. But the reality is that we can afford to pay it, starting with the budget we have right now. In fact, we have reduced people's taxes by 37 cents right now. And we did remove that 25 cents that we put on last year for road repair because we can pay for these bonds given the terms that we're likely to get, given the situation that we're in financially, without increasing people's taxes. I think it's a really good deal.
And you mentioned the budget. The budget, how does that look overall, the spending picture for the next 12 months? That budget began July 1st.
Well, we approved a budget of about $1.35 billion. $585 million is from the general fund. That goes to pay most services. We did reduce that county tax rate by 37 cents per $100 of taxable net assessed value. Largest property tax cut in 32 years. And we got some raises for our employees, 2.5% right off the bat, and then another 1% for those making less than $50,000 a year goes into effect in January, because those are the folks that have been most impacted by the fact that we haven't been able to give meaningful raises over the last 10 years. We've also created a much better situation for our sheriffs, where we've increased the minimum pay for them. And we're giving them some additional raises to make sure that they are competitive. And by the end of January, our sheriffs will be the second highest paid sheriffs in the state of Arizona,
really?
Second only to Maricopa County.
Very good. Supervisor Elias, Richard Elias with us on the Buckmaster Show. Thank you for spending a half hour here. Appreciate it.
It's always great to be with you, Bill.
Thanks very much. 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back talking about why there has been a spike in Valley Fever cases in Arizona. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Dr. John Galgiani, the director of the University of Arizona's Valley Fever Center for Excellence, joins me now here in studio. Dr. Galgiani, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Bill.
This news that California has decided to, they've really upped the ante in Valley Fever research. $8 million in funding for Valley Fever research and awareness. It's interesting. California is putting up money, but the state of Arizona has said no, has not put any money really up, and Arizona is kind of the epicenter for Valley Fever.
That's right. We have two out of three infections in the United States occur in Arizona, and that's almost completely in the 150 miles between Phoenix and Tucson, up and down I-10, because that's where the people live in our state. And California sees this as an issue, and actually it's been bipartisan. Republican legislators and Democratic legislators from the South Central Valley have worked together to identify this as an important thing. And you said $8 million for education and research for the next year.
But Arizona lawmakers have said no to any kind of increase to Valley Fever research or even awareness on it.
They haven't really focused on it. I don't know that they've said no. They just haven't noticed that it was the problem that it is, in my view. It really, I think, is as important in this for us, the population at risk. It's actually equivalent to the impact of polio before the vaccine on the population at risk. Of course, polio was an international disease, whereas we're talking about just those of us that live here in the hyper-endemic region of Pima and Maricopa counties.
What about this spike that we're seeing now in Valley Fever cases, up almost 50% over the same period last year?
It actually, you would think, and many people suspect it is related to the haboobs that we get and the windstorms, but it turns out the best evidence suggests it's not really the windstorms, it's more rain patterns. And this uptick that we've had this year was actually in concert with a big rainy season we had a year and a half earlier in the summer. The idea being that when it rains, there's a bloom of the fungus in the soil. And then when things do dry out, there are more spores to get in the air to infect people.
Do people realize that they have Valley Fever, or is it diagnosed as something else normally?
Well, actually, two out of three infections don't even cause an illness, and that's very good news. Those people become immune for the rest of their life.
Are you saying that I, living here for almost, over 30 years, perhaps could have had Valley Fever, Dr. Galgiani, and not realized it?
That's right. And the good news is you're now immune. But the one out of three people who get sick and see medical attention for that They have an illness that many doctors don't recognize for what it is and get it treated often as a bacterial infection, or sometimes they're concerned it's cancer, and actually many weeks to actually many months, and we have recent data to suggest how long this delay can be, goes before people eventually get the right diagnosis.
What do they present normally to their physician, perhaps starting with their general practitioner? What kind of symptoms would they typically present with?
Typically, for most patients, it's like a pneumonia. So that's chest pain, cough, fever, night sweats. Weight loss is often common. Fatigue, very profound.
Dramatic weight loss or just gradual?
Well, it's dramatic in terms of quickly over a couple of weeks, but it's usually only 5 or 10% of the total mm-hmm. weight. And people are disappointed that after they get over valley fever, it all comes back.
But that could be a terrible concern to someone if you suddenly started losing weight. You'd think of things like cancer.
That's right.
Yeah, you would.
And this illness, those people who seek medical attention typically have an illness that lasts many weeks to many months. So it's not just a 1 or 2 day flu-like syndrome for those people seeking medical care. It's really, in fact, 70% of people that are working lose time from work, and 50% of those lose at least 2 weeks.
Is valley fever a fungal infection?
It is. It's a fungus, and it's local to our area because it lives in certain kinds of soils, and the Sonoran Desert is a perfect place for it.
Does penicillin help?
No. Penicillin and any other antibacterial drug has no effect on the fungus. So when doctors assume it's a bacterial pneumonia and give you a Z-Pak or some other antibiotic for that, that actually all you get is the cost and the toxicity of the antibacterial drug.
Yeah, killing the good stuff too. And if you don't eat an antibiotic, don't take one.
Correct.
Yeah. So what about a cough? Is that one of the hallmarks of valley fever?
Yeah, cough is very common, and these are very nonspecific symptoms. You can see how you can't, from the illness, say, oh, that must be valley fever. It really takes specific testing. And in fact, these days, you can ask your doctor, and in fact, patients who do ask their doctor get a diagnosis earlier than those that don't. But also, now some of the companies offer these tests without a doctor's order, and you can go get it on your own say-so. The state legislature, as you recall, about 3 years ago, made it legal for people to order their own tests.
Like through one of these minute clinics or whatever?
Or not even through the clinic, through Safeway or one of the freestanding places.
And is that a blood test?
It's a blood test typically, yes.
And is that, you get a fairly quick diagnosis on that?
It, at the moment, takes a couple of days or a little longer than that to get a diagnosis. It goes to a lab. But we're actually working on some rapid tests that could take as little as 20 minutes. And that is not yet immediately available, but when it becomes available, and I'm very hopeful it will, would be a game changer. So you could go to your doctor, and before you leave the office, have a diagnosis.
Now, if you are diagnosed with valley fever, what would typically the treatment be?
Well, the best part of it is to figure out that you don't have all sorts of other stuff and stop getting diagnosed for other things like cancer and antibacterial treatments and all the healthcare utilization that takes. Some people do need antifungal drugs, but for most people, knowing what it is, getting the education about what it does, knowing what the complications are, which only occur in a small percentage of people, and then how to manage the disease as it goes through it is really very, very valuable. So you may get treatment or you may not, but either way, knowing what you got and getting precise treatment for what you've got is actually a benefit.
Is valley fever a fatal disease potentially?
Yes, it is. We think from death certificates, about 150 people a year die from this disease.
What can you tell our pet owners whose animals have been diagnosed with valley fever?
Well, you need
I hear these stories. It's incredibly expensive to treat for the pet owner.
And in Tucson and Phoenix, the veterinarians are very familiar with it because there are about 3 or 4 times as many valley fever infections in dogs. Their noses are right down there in the dirt.
Yeah.
And they have the same problems that humans do.
And what is their treatment typically?
They use the same drugs we use for humans. Typically, fluconazole is one of the most commonly used antifungal oral drugs.
Dr. John Galgiani is the director of the University of Arizona-based Center for Valley Fever Excellence. Have you ever had valley fever yourself, Dr. Galgiani?
You know, I know that I have.
You do.
When I first moved to Arizona.
When was that? What year?
That was in 1978.
Okay.
In the next couple of years, because my laboratory works with this infection, we were doing routine surveillance, and without any symptoms, I know my tests converted to positive.
And here's a question for you. If you have had valley fever, like we were saying, perhaps during my 30 years here in town, at one time I had valley fever, is there anything that can, are there markers that will show that an individual at one time had valley fever?
There is. Actually, a skin test used to be routinely available, and it's back on the market. So it is possible to get a test to see if you've ever had it in the past. It stays positive for life.
And what would you say the percentage would be of people living here in Tucson over 5, 10, 15 years that they might have had it?
We know from state data, actually, that the median length of residence till you get infected is about 12 years.
Wow.
So at around 12 years, 50% chance you've had it, 50% chance you haven't.
Where can people find out more about valley fever?
Our website is, we'd like to think, a very abundant, well-referenced, and I think reliable source. That would be VFCE, as in Valley Fever Center for Excellence, .Arizona. Spelled out .edu.
Or if you just want to Google, perhaps Valley Fever, University of Arizona will probably get you there too.
It's up there in the top 10.
Dr. Galgiani, always a pleasure to see you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Bill.
All right. We'll be right back. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on KVOI. Green Things is the new home to Zocalo, all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. Green Things is located at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk and just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Check out Green Things for all your gardening needs on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Let's go now to Arizona's capital, to Phoenix, and the Arizona Education Association, the vice president of that organization, Marisol Garcia. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Tell me how you pronounce your first name.
It's Marisol.
Marisol.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Let me ask you, when all is said and done, was the Red for Ed movement successful?
It was the most successful grouping of educators from across the state coming together to deal with issues that our students have been facing for over a decade.
Tell me about how the Invest in Ed will change things in Arizona.
Sure. So over the last almost three decades, our politicians have been giving tax cuts to corporations, and every single time it's chipping away at the money that's available for our public schools. And over the last few years, we've seen this come to a head with the teacher shortage crisis, where teachers are in such need that parents should be concerned about who's actually in the classroom with their kids, because we have not been able to recruit and retain qualified educators. And then even more so, myself as a middle school educator, the technology and textbooks and supplies that are needed are in such a disarray and such lacking that, you know, we've come to a point where teachers are spending anywhere from $100 to $300 of their own money to fund their classrooms. So the Invest in Ed's intent is to ask the voters to support public education in the state and to tax the top 1% and to bring in a stable amount of money that will help bring our schools back to where they need to be.
The Invest in Education would increase taxes, though, on single Arizonans that earn more than $250,000 or couples earning more than $500,000 and use the new revenue to increase education funding. Why should these people be penalized for the failings of perhaps the Arizona legislature?
I don't necessarily see it as penalized. I'm seeing it as the need to make sure that it's an equitable pouring in of money into our schools. I think that for a long time, sales taxes have been increasingly proposed and failed because most 99% of us are carrying the load, and it's time for us to find some equity in the funding of our schools.
How many signatures were turned in?
270,000.
And how many are needed?
150, almost 151,000.
So you're very confident that there will be enough to get this on the ballot?
I think confidence may be a strong word. I think we're extremely excited. We to be honest with you, is the most inspiring thing. We had up to 30 to 40 retired educators working 10 to 12 hours, making sure these signatures were good, and so that when we turned them in, we could feel a little bit more confident. But this, I'm sure, will ensue in a couple months of discussions to make sure it's on the ballot.
Yeah, because there are some new rules, right, that are kind of that were created by the Arizona legislature that some say are kind of hamstringing the ballot propositions, correct?
Correct. It's strict compliance, which means you can't go outside the lines. You have to make sure everything's spelled out. For instance, writing PHX could possibly throw out a signature instead of Phoenix. It is extremely archaic, but, you know, when I was out getting signatures, it actually made people want to sign more once they saw, because they were like, are they really trying to limit our ability to go to the public? And it was, yeah, that was the intent of it. And so we went around it. Teachers are very creative. We found ways of making sure we all followed the rules. And so we were more than excited when the numbers started tallying up, especially the last few weeks. They just started coming in boxes and droves.
You're a middle school teacher, correct?
Yes.
Is there a new kind of enthusiasm that you have detected among your colleagues?
Yes, I think that people finally felt like they could come out of the, you know, classrooms and out of the teacher's lounge, and they felt safe in saying what they needed to say and sharing stories. I think the social media aspect made people realize that they weren't suffering alone, that this was a widespread, not only statewide, but national issue that we were facing with the underfunding of our public schools. I think even more so, the more exciting I see, because middle school teachers are a little bit rambunctious considering who we work with, the elementary school teachers, that's who the new fire has been lit under. Most of them just are so used to putting their head to the grind and just working so hard and not having time, and this gave them a new energy.
Let's talk a little bit about what has been, the governor has said, is a 20% pay raise for teachers over a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of set us, where are we on all of that right now?
So the funding that went to the schools was based off the average teacher salary in the state. So it will be different from district to district. And it was 10%. So what we saw happening at a lot of school districts is people entering into negotiations, making sure that the 10% was somehow spread across the ranks. And so everyone from the janitor to the cafeteria worker to the counselors were also included in these raises. None of us will see or can ensure that we'll see the second part of that 10%, because it must go back to the legislature and then whatever governor is in office next year when that budget is passed.
So there's nothing written in stone that says that remaining 10% will go to teachers.
That is true. There's nothing written in stone, and we've been duped before, so we're very carefully watching. But I think even more so, there's nothing in stone that says that 10% can't go away next year. It's not part. It's part of a budget negotiation that could happen again. And, you know, proudly, AEA has been down at the Capitol for 20, 30 years watching this happen, and we will continue to do that now with a lot of other people to make sure that not only does that 10% happen, but the following year, the 5% that was promised, if Governor Ducey is elected, and then the following 5%. But, you know, we have elections in November, and we'll see how that impacts that debate.
What are you hearing at the Arizona Education Association as we get ready to open schools, really in a couple of weeks in some places? What are you hearing about the teacher shortage, about substitutes being used in the classroom? Kind of give us the overall picture.
I think that what we saw was teachers who've decided not to leave the profession deciding to stay for a little bit longer because they were invigorated. But I'm going to tell you, the teacher shortage is still real. There are districts that are having teacher fairs next week, 2 weeks before school starts. There are people who have really do not have faith in our state to be able to be a stable place to raise a family and buy a home because we have for so long neglected the system. So I think that the shortage will continue, unfortunately, because people are very wary of our state. But the people that are trying to do their best and committed will make the sacrifice and stay here.
The 10% or whatever, you know, a nice raise that the teachers did get, is that helping, do you think, stem some of this attrition? And are we getting more competitive? I have no idea what New Mexico, Nevada, California pay in compared to teachers in Arizona. Could you address that?
Yeah, if we got to the 20%, which has always been a dream for us, if we got that, we would be somewhat competitive with the surrounding states, of course, taking out California, just Nevada and New Mexico. I think that people will have to make a decision after this year to see if the enthusiasm continues and the focus on education continues to really think about whether or not they're going to move to this state and stay here and be an educator.
As Vice President of the AEA, do you then take a leave of absence? How did that work?
No, I actually still work for the district.
Which district?
I work for the Isaac School District, which is Central Phoenix. It's a small school district within the Phoenix Union. Mm-hmm. I actually come here on my evenings at lunch and on the weekends because the work is just something I love and completely dedicated to. But I still am at the schools and love it.
How long have you been a teacher?
I am entering my 15th year.
And why did you go into the profession?
You know, I really loved history and civics, and I decided to become an educator because I felt like I could spend a bulk of my life ensuring that the citizens who would be voting for our country were completely educated and understood the Constitution.
Amen to that. We need more civics teachers, yes. More civics classes.
Yes.
That's a big thing. I'd like to see that in every school.
Ms.
Garcia, thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
From the Arizona Education Association Vice President up there, Marisol Garcia, with us on the Buckmaster Show. We're pushing now, just 1 minute now, before 1 o'clock here in Tucson. Coming up this afternoon, my friend Ray Allen sticks around at 4 to 6. He helps out Mike Shaw. Together they put together the show. It's called Mike Check with Mike Shaw. Wake Up Tucson from 6 to 9, and then me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you. Lots to talk with Sheriff Napier. He'll be responding certainly to what Supervisor Elias had to say about ICE in our county jail. That will be one of our topics for Mark Napier, the sheriff, here on the Buckmaster Show tomorrow. Put it all together. We'll be back at 12:04. Have a great afternoon and evening.